Welcome to the CEN show, where we present the voice of the community. And this evening, I want to show the website so we could see what we're about. So here's the home page. And on the home page, we have both shows highlighted and where you can join the shows. And we have some of the pages on there where you can enter the pages like podcast, perspective writing, CEM forum, community actions, legends, and recommendations. Then also at the top, you can go here to the section about the Community Education Network. And there's a little small write-up about it. And we have our team members. That's me, Rasaki Maskani. There's Professor Amin-Ra. There's historian Joe Hembrick, Dr. Terry Strong, CJH Moore, Brother Muko, and Tommy Lee. And then coming soon on the website, we're going to have Peter Rogers and maybe Sister J. Dub.
I
So
thought Thomas was going to be on there.
that's Tommy Lee.
Oh,
That's
wow.
him. Yep, Tommy Lee.
What happened to
Yeah.
Muhammad?
Well, that's he go by Tommy Lee. We're gonna let him do it the way he want to. Okay, so that's the about page. And there's the other pages. Now, I want to go to the recommendations. We have two categories, services and products. But we have some pretty good things going on here. There's Brother Muko right there. Then we have a tutoring service, RMM. That's Rasaki, Manai, and Malka. That's my crew. We do online tutoring services. So there's, the website, I would say, is pretty informative and interesting. So I encourage everybody to check that out. And it houses both of our podcasts, the CEN show and Conscious Corner. And it has archive shows. Okay, I'm your host, Rasaki Maskani, and tonight's topic is a parent's perspective on public education. Tonight's guest is Peter Rogers, one of our team members that's got to be put on the website. We're going to get him on there soon so people can see him. Be able to contact them. You can contact us. We have everybody's email on that about section. Contact us if you want to. Okay. All right, Brother Peter, good evening.
Good evening.
How are you? And please start your presentation.
All right. Good evening, everybody. As I was saying, we got some heavyweights of education here. So I was a little, when I was talking before we came online, I said, oh man, I'm going to be a little bit on the ooh side dealing with these brothers here. But you know what? Amin Ross said something that really kind of puts it in perspective. Because see, remember, we're talking about, I'm going to talk about a parent's perspective on what's happened with public school. And the thing is when you go back and you take a look at what happened, and I can only really speak from the perspective of being a student in public school in LA Unified and being a parent of students who would be in the LA Unified district. So when I started school in the late 60s. Okay. I originally went to Angeles Mesa Elementary. I went there for 8 whole days before we moved. And then I ended up going to Baldwin Hills Elementary, Audubon Junior High School, Dorsey High School. And back in the day, LA Unified was a very geographic district. And if you take that geographic piece and you mix it with the fact that LA was an incredibly segregated city, whether it was by de facto or design, I think it was a little of both, mostly design, you ended up going to the school in a certain geographic boundary where you live. For example, where I live, if you live south of Jefferson and west of La Brea and south of the hill at Stocker and east of Culver City, you went to Baldwin Hills Elementary and then you fed into whatever your feeder schools were for your junior high and then you fed into your high school. And you know, that model worked pretty good until you got to about 1960. and you started reading this paper. In fact, I read this paper from a professor at Stanford named Jack Snyder. And what he did is he took a look at what happened to LA Unified in terms of the racial breakdown between 1960 and 1980. And LA Unified was predominantly white up until about 1967. And he has in this paper, he has what's called pre-Watts and after-Watts. And the sad part is a lot of the perception of our Black students didn't change before Watts or after Watts. In fact, one of the things he cites in the paper is that when they did a survey of teachers, they found 60% of white teachers found that Black students were talkative, disruptive, disengaged, and perceived as low achievement. Yet they gave that same survey about the same students to Black teachers, and 70% of the Black teachers found that the Black students were engaged, funny, and insightful, the exact same students. And this is pre-Watts. After the Watts uprising, 65, they added another issue, another piece came in to the perception of white teachers, and that we were violent. And that's what one of those things that started triggering again, the white flight, which was also really started because of the highway system and people abandoning the cities and going into the suburbs and leaving the inner city to fend for itself. But the question I wanted to talk and kind of get the discussion going now is, we're 40 years past this now. And as a parent and somebody who I do have to say, I have a little bit of a stilted perspective a little bit with LA Unified, because while I feel I got a very good education from LA Unified in terms of being able to have subjects available to me that I enjoyed taking, which was primarily math and science. And I felt like I could compete with anybody from any other school. I went to school, I had friends who had gone, a couple of them had gone to private school, had a few of them that went to parochial schools. We just called them Catholic schools back then. I didn't even think about being private. All I knew was they wore them funky gray pants and always had to have them little sweaters with them all the time. But I didn't feel like my education suffered any. In fact, I always felt like, shoot, we were actually just as good, if not better, than some of you guys that was going to them private schools, except some of them kids were going to private school because the public school didn't want them. Some of them were considered what they called at the time incorrigible. So I knew a kid down the street from me who was deemed incorrigible and got kicked out of the district. So one of the things that I looked at now is, and I was talking to my wife before I started, and I said, I know why the white folks left. But I'm talking about what I call the 10-cent parents now. And the 10-cent parents are those parents, like myself included, who got two nickels to rub together and will do anything on earth to keep their kid out of LA Unified or public school. I mean, between my wife and myself, we probably spent over $250,000 sending our kids from K to 12 because they were in private school the whole time and at least $1,000 a month per kid for 13 years. So I could have bought a couple of nice houses, a couple of counties in Texas, and maybe a nice little plane here and there for what I had to spend on, or what I chose to spend on them in education. So what I want to kind of discuss tonight and just kind of open the floor up to is, why do we have this perception of what the public school is? The other issue I have is, what is the perception of, or what are the things that public schools should be doing that are interfering with them actually delivering on the product they're supposed to deliver, which is being able to educate kids so that they can read, write, and compute at a proper grade level so they can go out and do what they need or want to do as a basis. But one of the things I've talked about in the past, especially with my wife and some of my associates, is have the schools taken on too much? And are we putting too much on the schools, where we've actually taken the school whose primary focus should be education and turned them more into social service agencies? So I believe there's a balance between the two. I just don't know where that balance is. So that's why I'm opening up the floor. And I'd like to get some insight as to what people think, because I, as a parent, And I've worked in, I've worked with Unified School Districts as a consultant. I worked in health and safety for LA Unified for 3 and 4 years. And I can tell you some horror stories about how that EH&S department works with the school. They don't. If a principal doesn't allow you on campus, you don't go. I sat there for 3 years in the office on there on 15th and San Pedro with the Environmental Health and Safety Group. And we went out to one school in 3 years to do an inspection and figure out what we could do to try to improve the safety for the students and the teachers. So, you know, I know there's problems back and forth, in and out. And I do want to say one thing before I open it up. And I did want to speak real briefly about what happened in Oxford, Michigan last week, because I think there's two things that are not being emphasized that I think really should be. I know we're talking about the shooter and talking about his crazy ass parents and all this other stuff, and the district attorney wants to hold everybody accountable for everything. But I want to give a quick shout out to those two teachers that alerted folks, because the one teacher, usually if I see a kid who's doing something and they were on the phone, my first instinct was, hey, get off the phone. I don't know what triggered them or what they saw when they saw they were looking for ammunition and brought that to the attention. And then the second teacher who actually saw the drawings and all the other stuff and brought it to the attention. The follow through, in my opinion, wasn't all that great. Should have never let that kid back in school. Like we used to say, you ain't got to go home, but you can't stay here. So I want to put a shout out to those teachers that actually put in that work, got that out there, and really had done the job to really avoid this. Because again, without them, we would never have known and we could have stopped this. So I just want to make sure that we give a lot of props to our teachers, because they are out there doing what they need to do. A lot of them ain't, most of them are. But from my perspective as a parent, I've had some great teachers as a personal student in LA Unified. I've had some not so good ones. My kids have had good teachers, both private and all their private schools. They've had some good ones. They've had some rotten. So let me just open up the floor. What's perspective
okay,
on this?
Okay, Peter, can you give us the first question that you want us to discuss? Just the first one.
Are the schools doing too much outside of their basic premise of education?
Okay, let's. I'm gonna start with Brother Doctor.
Okay, well, I'm not familiar with the school system like some of you guys are. And can you kind of expand on that question as far as outside? What do you mean by that?
Okay, I remember when I went to school, so you know, you can see the white here. When I went to school, all they had was lunch. We started school. We didn't have no breakfast program when I started school. You got breakfast at home. We started at 9 o'clock. We were done at 3. You were expected to bring lunch or buy lunch, or you got help with lunch, and that was fine. Then they instituted the breakfast program. And now you start seeing kids who had breakfast at school, because the theory was, hey, these kids are hungry. They're not going to learn as much. And that became kind of a springboard for, okay, now, well, now the kid has other issues. Now we got school-based health clinic. We don't just have the nurse. Now we got to have full-blown health clinic. Now we got to have preschool care. We got to have after-school care. We got to send meals home to the families. We got to send meals home with the kids, even during the summertime. And I'm not just talking during COVID. They've been doing this for years. So my question again is, those are some of the things I'm looking at. When I went to school, you were responsible for getting yourself there, eating your lunch, eating your breakfast, eating your dinner, doing your homework, whatever else. So that's where I'm looking at in those things that are outside, in addition to all the extra kind of social services that we're dealing with.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see your point. Yeah, that's a good point, man. Interesting. That's a nice point, because like you said, we went back then and today, yeah, man, the schools are doing extra, because I think, you know, the parents are not there anymore. And, you know, I guess it was a push back then where they were asking, because kids would come in, you know, both parents are working, leaving early, and kids wouldn't get breakfast, so they pushed it on the schools to do it. And I think many of the parents and many communities pushed for that. And, you know, basically the schools are taking care of the kids now, man. They're the you know, the babysitters, why the both parents worked. And I think back then, our, you know, it's a different time, man. Where they were, you know, we had parents at home, one parent home doing everything, and nowadays both parents are working, and I guess that's what we expect the schools to do more. Good question, man. But who made it that way? That's the point. I think the community made it that way. We made it that way, you know.
And I think, Doctor, where you're going with that is the next, I think the next question is it the school's responsibility? Because how does that affect the community? Because in my opinion, I think what we've done is abdicate a lot of the responsibility that we have as parents, that we used to have, that our parents used to have, that we've now abdicated that to the school. And I don't think that makes us a stronger community. I think that actually weakens us.
Good point.
Sandra.
Hey. I agree with Peter about it's a lot going on with LA Unified and education, period, but also being a person who did K through 12 in Catholic school, any type of school system, is when you're African American, you're going to run into some drama. So for Catholic school, I went to St. Bernard High School. I started in 1979. The first day of school, they had "niggers go home" written on the walls in St. Bernard High School, you know. So that was my first interaction with white people. And it was a very disturbing time. High school wasn't a great time for me. But my parents wanted me to have a better education. They didn't want me to go to Fremont. That's where we lived around the corner. I could walk to Fremont High School. But they didn't want me to go there. They wanted me to just get a better education. So, but it's a lot of different things with LA Unified. I think there's still a lot of good teachers there. I think there are a lot of teachers that are burnt out. And for example, I'm on a wellness committee at Jordan High School in Watts on 103rd. Now, it's LA Unified, but they don't have a health teacher. But the seniors need health to graduate. So that doesn't make sense to me. So I got on. I was like, well, I don't understand why you guys don't have a health teacher. Well, we can't really find a health teacher to come in and teach that class. I'm like, but this is LA Unified. At Hamilton High School, they have a health teacher. I think even Locke has a health teacher. They have a health center at Locke. All Pacific Palisades has a health teacher. So why on 103rd, we can't get a health teacher? So I've been on the committee for like 8 years now. On the fifth year, they had the bio teacher double duty and teach health. But the point is, you know, they need to start focusing on all of LA Unified and all of public school, and not just the ones where the white kids go. And not focus on the ones in places of high disparities. So it's a great topic. I'm glad that Peter's talking about it. I'm glad that it's brought up. But education, period, for African Americans, is just something that I find it's a slippery slope. When I was in high school, my counselor told me, You're not good enough to go to a 4-year college, so you should go to a JC, a 2-year college, community college. You know, but I went on with Cal State Dominguez, 4-year school, and I graduated. So, you know, fast forward to 2012 at Bishop Montgomery High School, my daughter's counselor is telling her the same thing. You're not good enough to go to a 4-year school, you need to go to a community college. So, you know, the disconnect is real, the struggle is real, and, you know, LA Unified is turning into a babysitting type of thing where, you know, the parents are not coming to talk to the teachers, they're not coming to parent-teacher night, you know, they're just making sure that they are getting their breakfast, getting their lunch, and getting whatever education that, you know, the school provides. So that's my take on some things. I may have gotten off topic a little bit, but I was just thinking overall.
Okay, that was interesting. Thank you. All right, Brother Mashinda.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, just commenting on or responding to the question. You know, from my vantage point, you know, through my employment and upbringing and things like that, you know, I draw the conclusion, you know, it's no question from, you know, back in the 60s up until current, that there's been a lot of changes, a lot of neglect, a lot of things that are going on. These systems are controlled by human beings. You know, these are people that are in place. The human, you know, the community, people that's in the community, they run these institutions. And so what's happening is, you know, it's just like anything else, you know, leadership, you know, it's like, what is the vision of the leadership, you know, whether you're talking from the city. And so we've had so many stacked decks, you know, in terms of, you know, 4-3, you know, just the whole makeup of, you know, when you vote to improve or, you know, in other words, you can't find a health teacher. You know, now really, you can't find a health teacher. So why? So then you break it down. Why is there funding for this health teacher? You know, things like that. You know, because I'm aware there's a lot of classes like physics and other things, like other advanced placement courses are not taught at a lot of schools, you know. So systemically, there's some breakdown, you know, but, you know, who controls the purse strings, you know, who divides the pie up, you know, as far as resources, not in terms of the free meals and things like that. Well, you know, I'm an advocate of the free meal program. Not, you know, I'm not a socialist. I'm a realist, you know, because identifying, you know, what's going on in the communities, you know, see, back in the day, I took 35 cents to school. And it was a time probably I could have got a free lunch pass, but my mom said, no, you can pay for it, you know. And, you know, I take pride in that. But then there were people who actually needed that, you know. Now, whose fault? The dog's fault, the cat's fault, the daddy's fault. There's a breakdown in that family. Therefore, whoever mismanaged the finances or whatever happened, you know. So I'm saying is, you know, I think that the legislation or whatever passed in terms of the free lunch programs was to make sure that, you know, no kid is hungry. And I guess they use the income level, you know, to determine if you can get free lunch or not, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe there can be some adjustments and things like that. Or is there some people abusing the program, just like the food stamp program? There are a lot of families who need that, you know. Now, do we want to totally rely on it forever? No. You know, we have to educate ourselves and empower ourselves and become self-sufficient and independent. But systemically, I do believe that there are negative forces that are trying to keep us from getting to that point. And, you know, it's no boogeyman. It's some real folks out there. It's real people, real humans out there trying to distract, trying to destroy a certain population of people, you know, and it's empirical evidence of that. So at the end of the day, all I can say is that, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of breakdown, you know, but again, there's a lot of positive effort that's being, you know, trying to make change. I've been here just on this podcast over the last year, different programs and implementations of, you know, in the school systems that are in the inner city, you know, that I was just talking with somebody today about, you know, trying to, you know, having a vision of bringing back flag football where I live at. I grew up in Compton, we had flag football systems that were like unbelievable, and everybody played, you know, once they got of age. And that ties into the school system because, you know, you got to go to practice after you get out of school. So I'm just saying community breakdown, you know, so I'm, you know, so I'm one that's like said, you know what, we need to do this. That's just one thing in the area where I'm living at currently, where I'm living right now. So anyway, like I said, I don't want to get off cue either, but it's just a lot going on. So, you know, we're going to do the best we can. Have a good night.
All right. And you know what? And I'm going to say this. Any of these comments that that we're hearing, none of these are off topic, because this spider web goes way out. There are community issues. There are breakdowns in the family. It's just like the family structure. You know, we looked at the structure and we had the mother at home or father at home, and you had somebody there. Both my parents worked until my dad couldn't work. I was one of those quote unquote latchkey kids. You know, I had that key around my neck on the string. I come home, you know, trying to be getting into the door like this and stuff like that. So, you know, we did that stuff, but there was also a difference of expectation. I have to come from a family where I was just fortunate enough that my parents were savvy enough to be able to get into college and go to school. My mother got a BSN from Howard. My father got a BA from Howard. So expectations for education in my family was always you going to college. It was always just an expectation. And I know Sandra alluded to something earlier, and I just wanted to kind of clean that up real quick. When she was talking about in 2012, how our older daughter was told, you know, she needed to be looking more towards a JC. Well, she graduated in 2012. By 2017, she had a master's degree from Baylor. So that's so much for going to JC. Anyway, I thought I'd throw that out there. Hey, Lauren, good job. But, you know, those are our kids. And the thing that I get concerned with is the messaging we're sending to our kids. I know one of the things that I looked at, and again, kind of going back through, you know, the schools doing too much. You go back to 70 and the Crawford decision, which was the desegregation decision out here. My brother was one of the first years to go to get bused. He was actually bused from here to, he went to Paul Revere Junior High School. And my mother actually, because of the spacing between me and my brother, I couldn't get in on the quote unquote legacy piece. I was 4 years behind him. The way the rules were kind of set up is if you were coming in when a student was going out, that was your sibling, that you could come in as a legacy. My brother went in 74. I wasn't going to come in until 75. If I was coming in 74, I could have gone. I'm actually glad I didn't go, because one of the things that I looked at in terms of a solution, and I've said this and I've gotten heat for it, but I'm going to say it anyway. The desegregation of LA Unified has failed. It has failed miserably. Just because the majority is now Hispanic, don't mean it still ain't segregated. It's just segregated brown. So we still aren't seeing the same thing. We're still seeing a lot of the same thing. And we're the ones who get left in the lurch. Back when LA Unified in 1967 at their peak, LA Unified was 55% white. Now LA Unified is about 4% white and 78% Hispanic, and we're about 8 to 9%. So we've dropped down even more. We're less of a priority. And my question, and again, going back to, we're getting all these kids, and again, don't get me wrong, I ain't blaming the kids. Not blaming the kids at all. The kids, you know, they get brought here. A lot of them are 5, 6, 7 years behind. But yet their age says, I'm 13, I read at a second grade level, I compute at a first grade level, but I have to be in the eighth grade. So you got a kid like one of our kids who's sitting in a classroom with a kid who's 5, 6 years behind and being held back because, well, the majority are them. So that class, you sitting there like this, you bored, heck, I wouldn't want to be. I always ask the question, don't ask the question, why did the kid do something? Ask the question, why would you expect the kid not to do it when they're sitting there frustrated and bored? Anyway, one of the other things, and I'm glad for the comments we're getting about what the schools are doing. And one of the things that I said that I was going to say that's controversial, I said, they just get rid of the busing, period. It ain't work. If the busing was primarily for desegregating the school, you got a district that's 75 to 80% Hispanic. You tell me where you're going to desegregate schools. Is brown desegregation better than white desegregation? Is brown segregation better than white segregation? Because at the end of the day, we still get the short end of the stick. I don't care whether it's brown, white, tan, whatever. We still sitting there trying to figure out what to do with our kids.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's see what our brother Hembrick got to say. Brother Hembrick.
Yes, sir.
Chime on in.
Am I muted?
No, you good.
Well, you know, there's a plethora of things we can discuss about what's in schools and what's not in public schools. And we know at the white schools is going to be more exposure and all of that. I know when I went to elementary school in Harvard City, it was LA Unified, and we were across the street from the projects. But still, the curriculum that we had compared to when I came to Compton was totally different, you know. But we all know what's up with all that. So as far as the breakfast stuff and all of that, well, you know, the public schools weren't thinking about breakfast until the, you know, the Black Panthers started feeding kids before they went to school. And I had a teacher just before I retired, a kid, you know, they were doing papers on, you know, whatever you want to do it on. So he picked the Panthers. And this teacher, who's a sister, a Black woman, I should say, just, you know, just ridiculed the kid. How are you going to do a paper on them? Oh, they didn't do nothing, da, 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 da. And I told him what I just told you, to go back and tell that teacher, if it wasn't for them, it probably wouldn't be any free breakfast program in the morning. But that's just one incident. But, you know, they threw us a curve some years back when they changed the focus of curriculum. For example, when they took out phonics and they went to this new math,
right?
That kind of threw us off. And I remember I was listening to what Brother Ra was saying earlier about the formulas and whatnot in math. I didn't get a chance to chime in on that, but you know, I taught math for a little while, and our kids really, you know, the formulas, I think it's the basics, add, subtraction, multiplication, and division is that we have serious problems, because that being off one iota can throw a formula problem all off and be wrong. And then, you know, when you can't sound out letters and consonants and stuff like that, you know, with no phonics, it's kind of hard to learn how to read. They went to this whole language approach, which kind of messed that all up across the minority areas. I don't know what the Europeans were doing out in the valley and all that, LA Unified. I'm not really an LA Unified person. But one thing that they did that made kids not be interested. Well, first of all, got to understand the gang banging and the crack thing, what it did to the Black communities. Parents getting killed in jail on drugs. And so a lot of parent support is not there. Because I know in 94, I did a study at Centennial, and 75% of the Black students were not with either parent. And group home, false home, grandma, grandpa. So turns into just a pimping for them checks is what it comes up to being. And then, you know, with no parents, another thing that they need that's in dire need of is mental health services due to the stuff that I just mentioned. And I know I tried for 8 years before I got out the game to try to bring that to the schools I was at. And it was very difficult. And just to piggyback on what you were talking about health, no health, they phased health out of the California State curriculum. That's what happened. It was a teacher at one of the last schools I worked at, and they phased her out because they were getting rid of the health classes, period. Not that you can't get nobody to teach it, the state phased it out. Another thing that is bad for our kids, the low academic ones, is that they took industrial arts out of school. It's not even there anymore. They're pushing towards testing and that sort of stuff.
Right.
And the things that attract those other kids to come to school, like auto shop, metal shop, you know, wood shop, these type of things are not there for them anymore. So, you know, they don't have nothing to really get their interest, really. But the key to any school site, let me say this before I go there. Another thing, there's not a lot of programs, like you mentioned the before school and after school, but what about clubs and organizations and stuff like that? They don't have a lot of that stuff anymore. They may have one or two and that's it. But I know when I went to Compton High, we had all kind of clubs going on. But getting, this is the crux to any school. Well, let me say this too. You have a central office and you have a school site, okay? Like Compton Unified, it's more of a central office structure. They don't want to hear what the school site has to say about the needs of their students. It's coming down from the central office. You don't follow this, you're going to have a problem. I didn't care what they said. I handled my business the way I wanted to handle it anyhow when I was working. Second of all, is the WAS accreditation process, okay, which gives schools their credibility as an institution. And most of the time, when this stuff comes around, it's a dog and pony show. They ain't doing jack. And 2 weeks before the people come, they drum up a bunch of stuff. We doing this, we doing that, and they ain't doing jack. But how it's supposed to be done is the students, the parents, the teachers, and the community should be meeting on what should be going on that school site with the students that you have. You got low-level students, and what are you doing to correct that? You know, what do you have for the those that excel? What do you have for, you know, to keep them from falling through the cracks? All of this type of stuff should be agreed upon in the beginning. And then monitor it along the way to see how you're progressing in these various areas. But in most of the schools I've worked at, they don't do that. And 2 weeks before the people come to evaluate what you got going on, they have a bunch of meetings and have everybody meet and scramble up something real quick. It's like making scrambled eggs and omelet and grits and rice at the same time. And the people pick out that you ain't got nothing going on and give you a failing mark. I know a couple of schools I was at that didn't pass at all. But these are the things that hamper the schools where it's black and there ain't too many more of them anymore unless you go out to the IE and then you ain't gonna get like 33%. That's where they all are now. And I know for mine, I couldn't, you know, from working in it and seeing what was going on, I couldn't put mine in it. I just couldn't do it. That's all. I'll leave it at that. But anyway, I don't want to take up all the time, but these are the things that I see that are wrong with public schools for the most part. And just basics. You know, I know I worked at Centennial for, I don't know how many, 20 years off and on. And there's two things I pushed the whole time I was there. A reading program that was viable. And I was told by assistant principal of curriculum at the time, who was my counselor when I was in high school, that you can't have a reading classes according to the state. And I had just left Linwood, which was 2 miles down the road, and we had 2 reading labs. I think the labs are a good way to go because kids can work at their own pace. You know, nobody knows what level you are because you're working on a computer, and the computer won't let you advance until you master this before you can move on. And Compton still hasn't addressed it adequately to my knowledge. I remember I brought this up to Brother Raw when he was a school board member on the sideline at a football game. You there, Brother Raw?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I told him on the sideline at a football game that 2/3 of my students couldn't read the book. You know what I'm saying? And I tried to do what I could do. I wasn't equipped and trained to train students how to read. I did my damnedest. I brought donuts every morning, and every gangbanger and thug that couldn't read was at my room before school started. And I tried to do what I could do, and I could see that they needed a lot more than I could provide them. So I referred them to, you know, neighborhood libraries that often have reading programs. But most of the time, the kid can't read and the parent can't read either. You talking about getting help from the parent, they can't read. So that and hot water are the two things that I begged for 20-some years at one school site, and they still don't have either one. You know, how a kid can't take a shower after participating in PE, you on ball team, you know, just basic stuff that they, you know, turn a deaf ear to. I've told numerous superintendents, it's ridiculous. I told Dr. Gonzalez, because he played basketball in college. And I told him, the whole year went by and he didn't do it. I said, Dr. Gonzalez, what if you went and worked out, got all sweaty, put your suit back on, and went to meetings all day smelling funky? I said, you see just how these kids feel, you know? And this whole thing about kids first, student first, is the biggest joke that is ever created. They don't give a damn about these kids. And a lot of the teachers, I hate to say, you know, have that same feeling. Because a lot of them are discarded folks that couldn't get a job out there where they live. That's why they come way 50 miles to work at a school, and they sit there, write referrals all day, and really ain't teaching jack. And that's why they, and then on top of that, the bullying that goes, you know, you Compton schools in LA, if you don't know how to handle them dogs, you're gonna have a problem. And if the adults are not observant enough to see what's happening, kids getting beat up, bullied, that's what's causing these shootings around at these white schools. And I think that one that you just mentioned earlier, Peter, I think it was a brother was saying, and that kid was getting bullied. He's just a normal kid.
Yep.
And grown folks see it and don't do nothing about it. I told the current superintendent in Compton, because they were talking about safety and bullying and all that, and how they were going to handle it. The first thing they did was got rid of the bathroom attendants who weren't even on a full schedule. They only worked 6 hours a day, so they didn't have to give them no benefits and stuff like that. And that's where bullying occurs. And you take away the first step, that's why they get fires in bathrooms and all this stuff all the time now, because no one's there. So anyway, I can go on and on and on. And I gave my damnedest for 39 years. I tried my best to do what I could do. If you could save one or two of them, you're doing good. But as far as the academic thing go, I think our kids need to be back to basics. The people that are teaching them need to accept them where they are and not be talking down to what they bring to the classroom, and use what's in these students' lives that they know, teach through that something that they already know to get them to understand what you're trying to get them to understand, if you follow what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what works. I found it worked. And you got to have a reason for them to come. If you teaching something, they showing up. They want to know. You know what I'm saying? But you have to make it interesting enough from something from their world. Don't be talking in outer space like, you know, like the difference between the SAT test and the black test. You know, them white kids have just as much trouble with passing the black test as we do with the SAT and all of that. So, you just gotta, and you know, that's just my perspective. I ain't gotta be right. But I spent 39 years in the business, and I've seen kids turn their life totally around by just someone caring about them and guiding them and showing them where, once you show a kid something that works for them, You got them after that. If they see what you're telling them works for them and they like, then you ain't gonna have no discipline problems and all of that because they want to know. So anyway, that's my perspective. I'll pass it on to the next speaker.
Okay. Let me chime in a little bit. Now, with the ROP program, they still have a few of those classes. We got matter of fact, we got a state-of-the-art auto shop. They just rebuilt the auto shop at our school, at Centennial High School. We have the cooking class. We have nursing. And we have a performing arts class. So those are a few that I know of firsthand. And it's, you know, the programs, we got teachers that have been there for a while. It's pretty decent, you know, not bad because Ms. Hammond been there for a while. You got Mr. Luna that he's a teacher at Compton College also. So there are some things going on. Now, is it like it used to be? No, we don't have a metal shop. We had a wood shop and they took that away and gave us engineering, which doesn't really amount to anything. But yes, a few things going on, but you made up some real good points, Hembrick. And you're right about the basics. A lot of the students come deficient, especially in math and reading, like you said, and we need to address that. So, okay, I'm gonna go back to Peter, and then we go to Professor Ra.
Yeah, I think these are fantastic points. And I'm going to bring up one that maybe it's a little bit of an elephant in the room, because I know when Henry brought up something, and I think Sandra brought it up too, and we're talking about parental involvement. I remember when we would have a PTA meeting at Baldwin Hills. Now, I live 5 blocks from Baldwin Hills School. My parents would walk to the school because it was, you know, you couldn't find a place to park. You would, after, by the time you parked, you was basically at the house. It was standing room only. This school, by the time, if I looked back at my first grade picture till my sixth grade picture, so from 1968 until 1974, about 30% of the students on that picture were Black, about another 30% were white, maybe 20% were Asian, the other percent were probably Jewish, and we had a few Armenians here. By the time I left Baldwin Hills in 1975, outside of a few Asians, it was all Black. It had all switched over, which was quite frankly fine with me because these were some of the smartest kids I ever dealt with. But one of the reasons I wanted to bring that up is this. Now that the district has gone primarily Hispanic, are these parents, and I ain't blaming the parents, I'm just looking at what we've been talking about with kind of babysitting and some of these other things, are these parents kind of being held hostage by the district? Because they don't have the power, they don't have a voice, they're just trying to get by. They're working sometimes 2-3 jobs. They hoping they can get the kid to go to school, get something to eat, get home safe, and that's about it. If they get educated, great. If they don't get educated, equally great. We worry about eating today. We ain't worried about eating tomorrow. And these parents don't show up because half of them, if you got these kids out here or 10, 15 miles away being bused somewhere else, the parent ain't got no time to be trying to get out to West LA and they live on 99th and Hoover. They ain't trying to do that. They don't have the time. So the schools can basically get away with whatever they want. I got one of my best friends, in fact, it's my kid's godfather. He's a teacher in Linwood. He says out of his 30 kids, he's probably got 11 who are on IEPs. And when they have parent-teacher night, he's lucky if he gets two parents. Because like it was said before, a lot of these kids, they're not even in their home. They are in a home. They're not in their home. And they have maybe a grandmother, maybe an aunt they live with. Sometimes it's just a foster home that they're in. So the infrastructure that we have with these kids to have support, the school becomes their support, but the school is doing so much and it spreads so thin, it's like taking one pat of butter to butter an entire loaf of bread. Nobody's going to get much of anything. So that's where I'm kind of looking at it too, because we've got to, my thing is, I remember something Roschke said few months ago. Sometimes you may just have to blow some crap up. And maybe this is time, because we talk a lot about education, because I have one phrase I've always used with my daughters, and they all know this phrase. You only get one fourth grade. The one thing that school actually sells to parents is time. I get X amount of time with this student from X time in the morning to X time in the day, 183 or 185 days a year. That's all I get. When my kid isn't getting the attention they need, not getting the focus they need, not getting the programs and the teaching they need, every minute that goes by is getting wasted. They're not getting it back, because we're not trying to hold kids back anymore. We've just assumed pass the kid along. As long as he ain't causing too much trouble, maybe he can read the diploma by the time they kind of march across that stage in, you know, 12th grade or whatever. Maybe they can't. But that diploma for a lot of these kids is a lie, because it says that this student has met the requirements to be a graduate of blankety blank district, and the kid can't even read the diploma. But we're good with that, and we got to change that. So with that, I'm going to go to the professor. I'll go to the man. Let's go to Dr. Ra.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. And I listened intensely to all the points, and everyone's made excellent points. So I just have a few comments. First of all, I love education. It's been my life. I'd still be in it if I didn't have run into a few problems. I wouldn't have never retired. And I've taught on every level, from elementary to university. And I love it. With all this problem, with all this challenge. But I found out the two key things to motivate students is developing a good relationship and being a good communicator, and coaching, being patient, and dealing with all of them as much as you can on the level in which they are at. The challenge is more than our schools doing too much. They're not doing enough. They can do a lot more. But the primary thing, as you and Mr. Hembrick and Sandra and Rashaki to say, is the collective education of the school, being a team school that builds a culture and an atmosphere from elementary or Head Start or preschool, to try to get kids to want to learn, to love learning. Many of them start out that way and they lose it because of the various reasons. When we went to school, it was different. Many of our parents were part of the Great Migration from the South to the East Coast, to the West Coast, to Midwest, and to wherever they could get out of the South. But most of our educators came from the South, out of Black schools. Most of the teachers that we had in LA when I was a youngster, I went to Holmes Avenue because we lived in the projects in the Pueblos. There was very few Black teachers there, but most of them got educated at a Black college. When I got to 99th Street, deeper in Watts, most of the Black teachers went to a independent Black college. Racism and segregation prohibited a lot of good teachers from teaching. So, you know, you look at the changes in the school system. When we went to school, they were called junior highs. Junior highs were started in the 20s because they had such a dropout for white kids in the 20s. And so they started junior high to help people. But our junior high went from the 7th to the 9th grade. Our elementary school, and remember, the first public schools, it was just kindergarten and high school. There was nothing in the middle. But now you have preschool, you have Head Start, you have kindergarten, and you have elementary school that goes up to the fifth grade. You don't graduate, they promote you to high school. Now you got sixth graders in high school. And you have eighth graders in high school and sixth graders in junior or middle school. The middle school structure is different from a junior high structure. When we was in junior high, they had A and B. In LA Unified, you was A7 and then B7. A, and you move on. You had home studies or something. You go to school early in the morning. But as far as feeding, you didn't have the homeless problem that you had or the poverty problem that you have has exacerbated with the influx of Latinos and others on such a high level. You're talking about people not having parents. There are people don't even have a house, living in cars and living in trailers and living in recreational vehicles and things of that nature. You have a different thing, whereas foster home became a profitable business. Education became more about money, about FTEs and full-time equivalent students. And that's what role is about. As long as the kid got there by the second grade, second class, and he checked in, they didn't care what he did. Because they're getting that full-time equivalency after the second or third, whatever one it is. You know, you take attendance. And after that, you didn't take attendance. It didn't matter. First and second grade, first and second period, you know. As a teacher, if you love teaching and you have the skills, I set up under great teachers in time of crisis. Mr. Freeman at Willowbrook Middle School, he had the whole school stopped at 12 noon and had to read because he was committed to teaching them to read. Every class had to stop for an hour and read, or 30 minutes, one of the two. I had a Mr. Freeman, when he was a principal, he did that at Willowbrook. But at Centennial, he was a reading teacher. Sports, as Joe brought up, if you didn't keep a C average, you couldn't play. So that kept a lot of people in. But remember, when we was in school, young ladies didn't have the access to sports that they do now under Title IX. Second, the whole concept of pregnancies in school, when we was coming up, the contraceptives was not a big, it was not practiced. You dropped out and you went to work, you know, and you took care of your kid or whatever. But the point is, times have changed. You got technology, automation. The whole purpose of keeping young people in school sometimes is tied to the job market. You know, I mean, you know, you don't want young people taking jobs from the older people. So you say, hey, you can't start working full time until you're 18. Then up at 16, you got to work only 20 hours a week and get a job permit and all that type of stuff. There's a lot of social stratification that goes into why schools don't function the way they do. But some schools do. You know, I have a son who's a principal at a school. He calls himself a revolutionary. And because his school, he has 100% attendance. Majority of his students are going to college. And there ain't nothing wrong with going to community college. That's the best deal you could ever get. You go to a four-year school, you're talking about $10,000, $20,000 almost. go to community college, you cut that in half or less. And you're taking the same class, you're getting credit. You can knock your first 2 years out if you focus and if you know how to counsel yourself as well as know how to maneuver around the school to get your grades. Many of us don't you know, I put my kids in community college when they were in their 11th grade. It was free. At one time, they wouldn't let you transfer the units, but then they changed the way you can use them to transfer. They graduated from junior high, and some of them in 10th grade. They graduated from high school in June and went, look, the next day, they graduated from community college. Because I was up on top of the game. Nobody gave me the game. I had to learn it. As an athlete, I wouldn't have never went to school if it wasn't for scholarships in basketball. But the coaches would make sure everybody had classes that they're going to pass so they can stay eligible. Then I'll go and I find out 40% of the universities are on academic probation of the students. And we only make up 3% or 7% or 8% or 17%. So that means there's a lot of white folks and Latinos that's on academic probation. They have problems in white, predominantly white schools. They're different from ours. But they have just as many problems. Second, it's called pass them anyway. In other words, you don't want an 18-year-old repeating the 12th grade or a 19-year-old, or you can't get out of school until you pass because they're too grown. You got 10th grade girls, here's a 19-year-old man, and, they move them on. Start age grade. Get them out of here. You know, you only can funk them so much. Then you got to go or drop out or do something else. Because you don't want that. There's a lot that goes into why there's problems. But if you're a down principal and you can build you a good educational team, but as Joe said, it's political. And as Rasha Key had found out, it's political. They're not looking for leadership. Sometimes they're paying political debts, hiring somebody's son, taking their girlfriend, making her principal, making her vice principal, no teaching experience, no nothing, just, hey, she hooked up with the superintendent or he is somebody's son on the school board, and they next thing you know, they're principal. And that's corruption. That's just straight out corruption. You call it what it is. You understand? And so the youth suffers a lot from that. But this whole country, for us, is education. They've been educating people for years, hundreds of years. And look how sick the society is. You know what I mean? Doctors they got, doctors of this, doctor of that, doctors of this, doctors of that. And all of them need doctors. You understand? They need some serious therapy. They ought to be embarrassed to be the richest country in the world with the educational record they got. And it's not because committed teachers don't try, like Brother Rasha Key, Hembrick, and Brother Mashinda. They be trying because they got the game and they really care. And a lot of people just, hey, look, I like it because I get summer off. I like it because I get the winter off. I get the spring off, and I get paid for all those days I'm off. And plus, I got 20 days of substituting I can use. And I get fringe benefits. There's a lot of politics that goes into why schools don't work. That's my point. The problem is you can't hold nobody accountable. unions won't let you fire bad teachers. Parents have very little juice unless they organize. They can go down there by themselves and scream. But if you can't deliver both, the both people, the board out or the board in, and you ain't doing nothing. You understand? And so a lot of training has to go into things. Man, you know, when I was in school, I didn't care nothing about no school. I just give me the basketball. What the damn basketball? You understand? And I didn't care until I got somebody pulled my coat. Said, man, you can hustle on the court, hustle in school. Well, let me see you get a degree. And for some reason that clicked. And that's when I turned it around and started getting A's. And graduated with my class and went on. And for whatever reason, I don't know how, I became a professor. I don't even ask no questions. I just accept it and move on. You understand? But you got to love what you do. And when you love what you do, you go through whatever you got to go through. That it's like, brother, I used to go up to Centennial. People would come to his class because they felt safe and they felt that they can discuss their personal problems and issues. That's the way I tried to run my classes. I taught in juvenile hall and they fed everybody and they gave them pencils and papers and gave them books. Same thing with public school. Now, let me give you an example. They can come up with new math books, but the teachers want to use the old math books because that's what their lesson plans are based on, and they don't feel like being reorientated to the new books. So they keep the new books in the closet and still go by the old books. Once I was in a math class, taking math, and man said, yeah, I was learning algebra and advanced algebra, and he said, whenever you get stuck, just add one. So where did the one come from? He said, that's how you do it, and it'll come out right. I said, well, this is all game then, you know? You can just add numbers until you get the number you want. You know, so, I mean, it's frustrating to those that don't accept the struggle. It's a struggle to be a great teacher and to be a loving, caring teacher. First, you struggle with yourself. I get to school early. I stay late. I walk the lines. I walk the lunch line. You know, and then getting back that free lunch. A lot of kids get free breakfast, get free lunch. They don't even eat it. They don't like it. You understand? They don't like that junk they be selling. They'd rather eat their food out of a vending machine. Third, that though some people really do be hungry. Kids be hungry, man. You know, for neglect, some of them come from good homes and be hungry. But the parents didn't fix them breakfast. Hey, you running late, let them sleep too late. Whatever the reason is. Then they say, we can't just give it to the poor. In certain school districts, we give it to all. But let me just say this as I conclude. Every school in the state of California, private, charter, individual home study, all come up under the Department of Education. And the state is responsible for the education. And they say they spend close to $5,000 on each student. And I don't know how much of it is toward education. You know, they base it on the teacher's salary, the administrative costs, and material and things of this nature. It comes out to almost $5,000. Looks like to me they're spending less than 5 cents in our public schools. But regardless of that, the first Black people that started going to school, they had to go hide in the woods They had to go in log cabins, walk 20 miles. You know, there was a school right next door. So, you know, if you want to get it, you got to get it. Everybody ain't going to want to get it. Don't want to pay that price. Some of us paid the price. And you got to pay the cost to be the boss. But you got to be an effective communicator. And I've seen my brother Henrik and myself, you know, we give $3 and $4, $5, $7, $8, $10 a day. We know when we come to school, we have dollar bills because we know that there's going to be some kids that need something. You understand? And that's just the way, that's how you build relationship. You develop a relationship with the so-called bullies and the you don't just, hey, I'm going to kick them out of school. Hey, you talk to them. Say, man, yeah, you need to cut that loose, bro. You know, you're hurting. You know, it can be done. You can turn kids around. I was turned around. I was straight out hoodlum thug. Straight out. I can't find the people that I misused and abused, bullied, and did everything else. And apologize to them because I don't even know who they are and where they are now. But I do it through my own spiritual and meditational aspect and make amends by making sure my kids didn't do the things I did. Ditching school was cool. We had the brothers on the other day. We used to ditch at his mama's house. You understand? When it came down to them standardized tests, 3 hours, 2 hours, and all that stuff, I just, whatever, A, B, C, I'm going to buy 2 B's and 2 A's, and, you know, mark the little circle. I didn't give a damn about what the test was on that test. I didn't know they were measuring my intelligence, my IQ, but take me out in the streets, as Joe said. Across the key. Hey, I can count when I shoot them dice. I can count when I'm playing talk. I could read my Disneyland ticket. I could read my Magic Mountain ticket. I can read my Knott's Berry Farm ticket. I can read my What I Want to Read ticket. I can read the signs in the car going to Vegas. See, so you read what you want to read. That's my point. Getting them to want to read to be the best. That's all. I can go on and on. Asante, listen.
Okay. That was a little entertaining there, Brother Rob. All right. Take us home, Brother Peter. Take us home.
You know, I'm so glad that Brother ended like that, because you can't end on a better high note than that. But I think the thing that I really take from Amon-Ra here is his passion. Regardless of the system, if we don't have the individual passion in our own homes, the individual passion to teach our kids